are. Mm-hmm. But at one time, there were somewhere around 6,000 to 8,000 petitions for certiorari a year, and the Supreme Court would take 300 cases. So just on the basis of sheer numbers alone, you know, your chances aren't very good. But you can have the best case in the world, and the Supreme Court may not take it for reasons that they never disclose. It could be policy reasons, because they have too many cases of that kind on the docket, because they don't think it's ripe for review. And you never know these things. So the short answer to your question is you have to be lucky. It has to be the right time and the right case to get before the Supreme Court.
And you go into a courtroom and they're sitting there?
They're sitting there, and all at the same time. I went down the week before my first argument because I had never seen an argument, and I thought, well, gee, you know, I don't want to get up there for that argument not knowing how to address the court, what to wear, what kinds of questions they're going to ask, how you respond to questions, that kind of thing. So I went down to hear some arguments. I came away with the conclusion that their chairs are wired with electricity. Why do I say that? Because exactly at 12:30, they get up out of their chairs to go to lunch, and at 4 o'clock, they get up. It doesn't matter where you are. If you're unfortunate enough to be the last person to argue, they'll leave you there, and you have to come back the next day. The guy that I heard that day was from California, and he had 5 minutes left of his argument. He had to come back the next morning.
Who was the Chief Justice when you were?
Warren Burger. But they're very well prepared, and to me, it's like the World Series.
That's what I would think.
I mean, it's the most exciting thing in the world. I took my kids and my wife with me, and my youngest son, or younger son, was maybe 10 at the time. And the two cases immediately before our case involved, they were called the Cohen and LaFleur cases. And the issue, they were hearing two cases together, was whether a school district could establish a mandatory leave of absence policy for pregnant teachers. Could they say that a teacher who was pregnant had to take a leave of absence at the end of her fifth month of pregnancy?
She could not teach after that.
After that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the question, was could that be done consistent with the Constitution? Anyhow, then our case came up after that, and the lawyer on the other side was Chip Yablonsky. His father was Jock Yablonsky, who a mine worker.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. He was a local.
Yeah, he was a local guy, and his father was murdered.
Right.
But anyhow, after the argument, I said to Barry, my younger son, I said, well, what'd you think of the argument? He said, well, he says, I liked your case okay. He said, but frankly, it's between your case and that sex case about pregnant teachers. I like that case much better because I could understand that one. I said, you know, Barry, that just proves one thing.
Today,
I could dress you up, but I can never take you anyplace nice.
Well, you've had an exciting career.
Yeah.
You really have. Any questions, Ruthie? You know what? You covered everything so well in the first tape. You really did. That we did not have a lot to come back for. But it was a wonderful, interesting time today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.